Welcome to Behind the Headlines, the weekly Utah news roundup from the Salt Lake Tribune and KCPW. I'm Roger McDonough. Today, we bring you a Utah election recap, or a recap of at least what we know. And of course, inevitably, we'll talk about the presidential race, including some Utah reaction to President Trump's unsubstantiated claims of voter fraud. And with Utah coronavirus numbers again shattering records, officials warn that the worst is yet to come. Joining me on the phone this morning to talk about all of this, Salt Lake Tribune government and politics editor Dan Harry. Good morning, Dan, and welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here. Reporter Taylor Stevens is with us as well, and good morning and welcome to you, Taylor.
Good morning.
Good morning. And news columnist Robert Gerke, welcome to you. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Of course. Pleasure as always. Listeners, if you'd like to submit your questions and comments about the stories that we are covering today, you can tweet to us. Our handle is at KCPW. You can also call us. The number is 801-355-8255. That's 801-355-TALK. You know, I know that everyone wants to hear about the presidential race, but as that race is not yet, as of this exact moment, decided, as I look at the Associated Press's website, we will instead this week begin the show as we did last week with the surging coronavirus numbers. We've got a quick audio clip on our current situation on that front. Take a listen.
Today, we have an increase of 2,807 cases, our largest single daily increase in new cases in Utah. Our rolling 7-day average is 1,943. This is an increase from last week when we were at 1,578. Our rolling 7-day percent positivity average is now 19.5%, an increase from last week when it was 18.1%. We currently have 389 individuals in the hospital due to COVID-19. Again, our largest single day count for hospitalizations. And our ICUs are at a 78.5% utilization.
You've just heard the report from Dr. Dunn, and it's grim news, and it's discouraging. Unfortunately, the news of these higher numbers are not surprising, and if projections that we have coming out of our Department of Health are correct, we're going to see higher numbers in the upcoming days and weeks. We'll continue to see this dramatic increase unless we modify and change our behavior.
Okay, and that was first state epidemiologist Dr. Angela Dunn giving us the record high numbers on COVID yesterday and the beginning of Governor Gary Herbert's comments on that front as well. And Robert Gerke, news columnist, I'm just going to turn to you to ask you, you know, record high case count, record high ICU utilization, record high percent positivity of those tests. I think we said something similar last week on this show. We're just not making progress on this. We're losing the war on COVID. Is that the long and the short of it, Robert Kirke?
Yeah, I mean, we're becoming a little bit of a broken record. I mean, since early September, we've seen this consistent increase, the consistent upward trajectory. It's actually accelerated this week. Our case rate is growing faster than it had been the prior week and the week before that. So. We could be in real trouble. As you mentioned, the ICU capacity is a particular concern. You know, close to 80% full now across the state, but you know, in local hospitals in the Salt Lake Valley, in Utah Valley, and in Dixie Regional, they're right at capacity. I mean, they're if not above it. You know, and then there's, as we've heard over and over again from doctors and nurses and healthcare providers across the state, they're exhausted. You know, they don't. While we may have ICU beds, we don't have ICU doctors and nurses, and that's turning into a real problem. And I think it's a little daunting to hear the governor say that the projection is that it's going to continue to get worse. You know, I don't see any reason to think it's not. You know, there's no sign that it's slowing down at all. But you know, and it's a real concern, or it should be a real concern to everyone in the state.
You know, yeah, the governor talked about people becoming numb to this. He's talked about that before as well, of course. Is there any reason to think, you know, at this point, at this juncture, you know, that this pandemic is any less of a big deal than we initially thought? You know what I mean? Are people becoming complacent because they feel safe?
Well, know more about it now. Obviously, we have much better testing capacity. We understand the treatments a lot better. Doctors have gotten really good at treating people who have it, and they've shortened the duration of hospital stays. Our mortality rate has decreased significantly. All of that is really good news, but I think it also, like you said, suggested it lends itself to this complacency. And then you've got just the sort of crushing fatigue, the COVID fatigue that I think people are feeling, having had to adjust their lives for as long as we have now, you know, 6, 7, 8 months of this. It takes a toll on people. But, you know, it also, the virus continues to take a toll whether we're tired or not. And so, you know, it's hard to encourage people or convince people that they need to continue to you know, exercise caution, wear masks, these things, when they've just kind of had it with it.
And again, more than 600 people have died from the virus here in Utah. It's troubling. We're heading into the winter months as well, and the flu season. Health officials, of course, urge everyone to wear a mask. There is, in fact, a mask order in place in most counties in Utah. And the other advice remains as well: social distancing, avoid gatherings, wash your hands frequently. We could linger here, but God knows we'll return to the story in the future. So let's instead turn to the other big news of the week, which, of course, was the election. Lots of places we could begin, and I will sidestep the presidential election for now and just say that, looking at the New York Times election map, Biden is up a fraction of a percent in Georgia, around 7,000 votes in Pennsylvania, 11,000 votes in Nevada. Maybe if I hit refresh on my browser, that will change. But we're going to dive instead into another race, a local race that is still too close to call, and that is the race in the 4th District between Utah's lone Democrat in Washington, Ben McAdams, and Republican challenger Burgess Owens. Taylor Stevens, right now, where does this race stand?
Right now, Burgess Owens is in the lead. They're separated by about 2,200 votes, and Ben McAdams had been in the lead since election night. And as of yesterday, with a lot of ballots coming in from Utah County, the Republican candidate Burgess Owens kind of overtook Ben McAdams. However, there are still a lot of ballots left to be counted in Salt Lake County, a handful in Utah County, and so we'll have a better sense of where this race is later today when they release more results.
Yeah, and you said that the 4th District, I mean, it has this varied makeup. The it's split largely between Salt Lake and Utah counties, but there are other counties involved as well. The bulk of all of the voters for the 4th District are in Salt Lake County, is that right?
Yeah, and I spoke with a political scientist yesterday who said that 11% of the district is in Utah County and 85% is in Salt Lake County. So that's about the makeup of it. And we've seen that Owens has done better in Utah County, has performed quite better. As of Thursday, he had 67% of the votes in Utah County compared to McAdams at 27%. But in Salt Lake County, McAdams tends to do better, a little bit more moderate, more Democrats in Salt Lake County. And there he had 54% of the vote compared to Owens at 41%. So we do see a pretty big distinction in how they've performed in these very different parts of the district.
You talked about the votes outstanding, the fact that there are, you know, more votes to be released. You said later today, is that correct? What do we know about the votes that are outstanding in terms of where they're from?
Yes, we know there's about 3,000 left in Utah County in the 4th Congressional District, and they've been able to break that down for us. In Salt Lake County, the clerk, Sherry Swenson, said on Thursday that there were about 160,000 ballots remaining countywide. So it's not entirely clear how many of those were cast in the 4th Congressional District race, but we do know it's a lot more than 3,000. So there are many more outstanding ballots in Salt Lake County than there are in Utah County. Utah County, I believe, has been prioritizing the ballots in the 4th Congressional District, so we may see all of those come in today. We're not sure exactly yet. We're expecting more results sometime this afternoon.
There's some questions that I'm going to before I unleash the columnist, I'm going to ask the question, Taylor, to you, which is, were there any, you know, issues in this race that were defining, any real issues, or is, you know, is everything now just voting one side or the other? I guess, yeah, how did this race play out?
Yeah, I mean, this was a race where I think both candidates struggled to define it around a particular policy issue. There were some attempts by the McAdams campaign to talk about blocking severe testing, but nothing really bubbled up as like a defining issue of this race. And instead, it was really about attack ads, about personality, about, you know, both candidates trying to label the other one as an extremist. The McAdams campaign, you know, criticized Owens for appearing on some programs related to QAnon, a far-right conspiracy theory. The Owens campaign, you know, tried to pitch McAdams as an extremist with the Pelosi party line, voting, you know, more than 80% in line with Nancy Pelosi's agenda. So it kind of more devolved into that personality and into questions about the candidate's past than it did in any meaningful way around policy.
Dan Harry, Tribune Government and Politics editor, do you want to weigh in on that question that I just asked about whether the, you know, the issues, the policy issues play much of a role in the 4th District, but in a lot of elections right now?
Yeah, I think Taylor is right that, you know, at least on the Owens side, they really did not focus on policy issues. I mean, I really can't think off the top of my head of following this closely of one thing that Owens really argued for as a policy change. You know, he talked about things like God and keeping socialism out of the United States government and Nancy Pelosi, but he didn't really talk about issues at all, and he seemed to be running very much a national race rather than a Utah-focused race. McAdams tried to break through on a couple of policy issues, the resumption of atomic explosive testing in Nevada was one, and that, I think, kind of dogged Owens a little bit. But, you know, we haven't heard a lot about the resumption of testing after reports a few months ago that the administration was considering it. So I don't know that that got him a lot of traction. He did bring up health care, which, you know, a lot of Democrats nationwide are running on. And as a big supporter of President Trump, you know, Burgess Owens did struggle to defend the position that the Republicans are taking to wipe out the Affordable Care Act, saying that our health care would be better.
Right.
But they have never really produced a plan to explain how they're going to make health care better. You know, it doesn't seem like they have a plan.
Okay. And just on the, you know, going back to the actual vote count itself, maybe I'll turn to Robert Gierke, because I know that you wrote about this in a column, or maybe it was just on Twitter, I can't remember, but 3,000 Utah County votes remaining, Taylor said, and then 160,000 votes in Salt Lake County, although it's uncertain how many of those are from the 4th District. You, from wherever I read that, believe that McAdams will retake and hold the lead in this race. Is that correct? Is that your feeling?
Yeah, I mean, right now that seems to be the most likely outcome. I mean, as Taylor mentioned, Owens has a lead of a couple thousand votes right now. With 180,000 votes in Salt Lake County, historically, about 54% of Salt Lake County votes fall into the 4th District. So even if you know, call it conservatively half of them, right, at 90,000 votes, I'm sorry, it was 160.
Yeah, 80,000 votes, right? So that'd be.
So yeah, you end up at 90,000 votes, and so McAdams only needs to win those by a small margin. So far, he's won about 54-55% of the votes in the county. Unless that would change and flip significantly, then there will be plenty of votes there for McAdams to retake the lead. The one caveat, I guess, would be that 2 years ago we went through this with the Ben McAdams Nia Love race,
right,
and you know she did run considerably better post election day in the late arriving ballots than she did on the day the ballots were announced in the first day or two. But again, Owens is underperforming Love in Utah County, underperforming her in Salt Lake County. McAdams actually had done a little bit better in Utah County. We'll watch these last 3,000 votes to see how that shakes out. But right now, I would think that, you know, barring some significant reversal in the way these Salt Lake County ballots, these tens of thousands of Salt Lake County ballots come in, McAdams should be able to win this by a fairly comfortable margin, certainly a lot more than the 694 votes he won by 2 years ago.
Right, but a tiny margin.
Yeah, comfortable. I think comfortable in the 4th District has a different meaning than it does in other races.
That's a good point. Yeah. And Taylor Stevens, just on that point, I mean, are there any, you know, I'm looking at Georgia talking about recounting presidential votes because of the close margin. Is there any sort of recount that happens automatically in the state of Utah if there's a, you know, a very slim margin?
I'm not sure. Dan, do you know?
Yeah, that's a good question. Sorry.
Yeah, you have to request it. It has to be the losing candidate has to request it. It has to be, I believe, less than one vote per precinct. Is get you qualified for a recount that the government will pay for. You can pay for it yourself as a losing candidate to do a recount. What we've seen in the past is very little changes in recounts. They basically run the ballots back through the machines, and there are usually a few differences, but you're talking such a minuscule amount that I don't remember having seen a recount change the result of an election in Utah.
Okay. Hey, Taylor, anything to add here on this election before we head to our first break in the show?
I just think that, you know, we always had a feeling that this race was going to be close based on the polling and also based on, you know, how narrowly McAdams won the seat in 2018. So like with the national presidential race, I think everybody's just needs to be patient. And I think we're used to that in Utah because we've seen this before in this district. But just being patient and seeing where the cards fall once all the ballots are in.
Okay. That's Taylor Stevens.
Can I just make a comment?
Go ahead, Dan Harry. Yeah.
You know, in the 4th District, it is quite a roller coaster, I think, for voters who are following that race because, you know, you have McAdams up on election night. That lasts for a couple of days. And then you see Owens come and overtake him. And then it gets down last night at one point, you know, yesterday afternoon, to 18 votes. I mean, 18 votes.
Yeah.
Out of about 260,000 votes cast, it's amazing the narrowness of that. And then it goes back up because Utah County adds some more votes. So now it's up to, you know, 2,300 vote gap, something like that. But it's for somebody who's vested in that race, and I'm not talking about the candidates here, but supporters and voters, that is all agonizing to have that go back and forth.
Dan, obviously there's a lot of anguish out there in among voters who are watching election results.
In the presidential race,
yeah,
too, right?
Exactly, at that national level. And it's something, you know, we just, this is democracy can be messy, and we just have to wait and see what happens. You know what, we're gonna actually turn to that presidential race in a little bit. We're going to take a first break in the show, and again, the 4th District remains this battleground, and we'll see what happens. You're listening to Behind the Headlines on KCPW and Utah Public Radio, featuring reporting from the Salt Lake Tribune. And when we come back, we'll keep unpacking Utah election news, and of course, we will dip into that presidential race as well. Stay with us.
You're listening to Behind the Headlines from KCPW, Salt Lake Public Radio, and the Salt Lake Tribune. You can find podcasts of all of our local programs at kcpw.org. And hey, while you're there, why not make a pledge? Because your contributions power this local, independent, nonprofit outlet. Thanks for listening and for supporting public radio.
Welcome back to Behind the Headlines. I'm Roger McDonough, and I'm joined by Salt Lake Tribune Government and Politics editor Dan Harry, reporter Taylor Stevens, and news columnist Robert Gerke, all via the phone this morning. It is our Friday morning news roundup, and you can call us to join this conversation as well. The number is 801-355-8255, or you can tweet to us. Our handle is at KCPW. Let's turn to more elections, and of course, there are any number of places we could go, but let's do the top-down run-through, and no surprise that the majority of Utahns voted to re-elect President Donald Trump. And I don't know if you have this, Dan Harry, but I guess if you have those numbers in front of you, was the margin at all a surprise here? Was it slimmer than expected, bigger than expected for Trump in the state of Utah? Anything to say there?
So right now it's at about 59% to 38%. And, you know, we saw some polls that had it much closer than that. There was some kind of national news about how Biden was performing so much better than Hillary Clinton did 4 years ago. And he did perform better. And that's largely because Evan McMullen was in the race 4 years ago, an independent candidate. And the Republicans who were disillusioned and disenchanted with Donald Trump, you know, largely went to Evan McMullen. He actually finished third, but pretty close to Hillary Clinton. He didn't have that third party candidate. So anybody who was disgruntled with Donald Trump, I guess, ended up voting for Joe Biden this year. But still, you know, that's quite a gap. That's a 20-point gap. Utah remains a very Republican state, with a few exceptions.
Didn't the polling leading up to you know, Election Day show a wider margin than what you're describing? Currently, the race stands at. Am I mistaken?
I think it was narrower, if I recall.
That's what I meant. What you're seeing now is a wider margin.
They did, and you know, polls. Polls are getting a bad rap these days, right?
Yeah.
We're coming out of a presidential race that was much, much narrower than folks listening to the pollsters believed it would be.
You know, on that front, maybe, I don't know, I don't even know if I should bring in Robert Gerke. Robert, Utah's a red state, a Republican state, but, you know, not that everyone needs reminding this, but there are those who are not so hot on the president and his behavior, among them Republican Senator Mitt Romney. So is the idea that Utah has soured on Trump some, as those polls would have seemed to suggest, is that just not true?
Well, I mean, I think the 59%, if that's where we end up, in that neighborhood, is one of the lowest turnout, one of the lowest levels of support for a Republican candidate in a long, long time. I mean, the exceptions, I guess, were the Dole race and the George H.W. Bush race, his reelection campaign, when you had Ross Perot in. And that, you know, so in those two, obviously, they got less of the percentage. But you have to go back to, you know, Nixon, who got 57% as the last person to finish that low. So, you know, it's obviously he won the state. He won the state by a fairly comfortable margin, 20 points almost. But it's a low percentage. And for Biden, it's the best performance for a Democrat in the state since Lyndon Johnson won it in 68. So I think, you know, obviously Trump was less popular in Utah than his Republican predecessors or Republican nominees in previous years. But I don't know that we can say, I think it would be premature, certainly, to say that it indicates there's any larger shift in the state when it comes to the presidential contest.
You know, we're on this sort of bizarre interstitial cusp, you know, this presidential election purgatory, and when we will ever get to talk about that again. So let's dive into the fact that we have no results yet and we're waiting, but that things are changing. I've got Robert Gerke, four words for you to consider and then to say something about, and those words are Georgia, Pennsylvania, Nevada, and I guess Arizona, though Associated Press already called Arizona for Biden. Can we say this is over? When can we say this is over, Robert Gerke?
I mean, it's, you know, this morning Biden took a lead in Pennsylvania. That lead is expected to grow with the remaining votes to be counted there. That alone, with the 253 he already had firmed up, excluding Arizona, since that's still sort of, you know, even if that one's considered tenuous, with Pennsylvania in his column, he wins the presidency. And so that one is not expected to get any closer. Georgia is tight. They're going to have to do a recount there. But, you know, as Dan noted, recounts don't often change the outcome. And so if that stays in his column, You know, he's leading in Nevada and Arizona. He doesn't really need those states. Joe Biden will be the next president of the United States.
Dan Harry?
You know, can I just say, too, that as in the 4th District, the narrowness of these state elections is mind-boggling. In Georgia right now, it's less than a 2,000 vote difference. And that's with 5 million votes cast.
Wow.
The odds, I mean, it's just, those numbers are remarkable. And in Pennsylvania is the same way. Right now, you've got a 9,000 vote lead for Joe Biden. And that's about 7 million, 6.5 million votes.
And that's, of course, these are in specific states, Dan, as opposed to, you know, the national popular vote, which is strongly in Biden's column, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's see. The popular vote right now is
about
73.6 million for Biden, 69.7 million for Donald Trump.
Okay, so more than 4 million. Okay, I don't know how we can. We're just waiting for results there, and we'll see when it's over. But just before we keep going with election results, we're talking about the presidential race, and President Trump has called into question the voting process without evidence. And then I read a headline to an article that Taylor Stevens wrote, and it made me wonder. Taylor, that headline read, "Report upward of." Of 10,000, I believe 10,000 by mail ballots unaccounted for in Utah. So, is there some nefarious reason for these missing ballots, Taylor? What gives?
Yeah, I think this has been really interesting to kind of dive into. So this data comes from the Washington Post. There were apparently, as of this week, more than 300,000 ballots nationwide that were reported, quote unquote, missing by the U.S. Postal Service. And what that means is that the ballots received entry scans, but not exit scans. And so there's no mark that they actually left the building or were delivered, left the processing centers. But what they say has happened and what the post office has told us is that in election season, when it's getting close to the election, they will sometimes have postal carriers actually walk the ballots to a county clerk's office and kind of divert them from the typical path that the mail would normally go through in an effort to make sure the ballots get to the county clerks in a timely manner. So they say that while there may be no exit stamp, that doesn't mean that these ballots are just unaccounted for, that they believe that most of these ballots have made it to the county clerks. There's no way of knowing whether there are any ballots that didn't make it. They don't have, they didn't provide a number of anything like that. But what we believe, based on also the word of the Director of Elections in Utah, he's noted that it's not unusual for that to happen, that that's, been the case in past elections. Sure. It's just that there's more scrutiny of the postal service system this time around. So basically what he was saying is this has happened before, but now there's more attention on the by mail system and more scrutiny of it. And that's why we're kind of seeing this data coming to light.
Okay. And this is why we go behind the headlines on this show, because you might have thought something fishier was afoot if you were somebody who only reads the headlines. By the way, Dan Harry, go
jump
ahead.
In and say too, but one thing that learned is that there are kind of a lot of informal shortcuts that the counties and the post office have been taking in Utah as they've developed their expertise in having by mail elections. I know the other day I was trying to set up a photo out at the Salt Lake County Government Center for taking ballots to the post office, and Sherry Swenson was explaining to me how they are in direct contact with the supervisor there at the post office. They brought in a skeleton crew on a holiday to start processing ballots. So there's all these informal agreements that have developed to try to make sure that these ballots get delivered and get delivered on time. So it's pretty interesting that they've figured out some of these shortcuts, and as Taylor says, it kind of diverts from the normal process sometimes. So maybe the record keeping is not what you would find in the normal flow of the mail.
Taylor, anything else to add here? I'd love to keep marching along with election results.
No, I think we covered it.
Okay. Thank you for that. And let's keep moving down the list, but we will stay in the realm of federal elections. We talked about the 4th District race before. All of our other congressional districts held elections as well, obviously. And Dan Harry, the 1st, 2nd, and 3rd districts, once again, not much in the realm of surprises here. Just give us the outcomes, if you would.
Yeah, the only surprises in the 4th district, and that's that we'd be surprised if we weren't surprised.
Right.
So we had Republicans win clear landslide margins of victory in all the other three congressional districts. And I think one of the interesting aspects of that is that in the 2nd district, which includes Salt Lake City, if you look at the numbers, scrutinize the numbers a little bit, you find that while Chris Stewart won by a landslide over his challenger, Cale Weston, in Salt Lake County, Cale Weston crushed Chris Stewart. But, of course, that doesn't matter because all those votes get overwhelmed by the outlying areas that district, goes all the way from Salt Lake City up into even Davis County and then down all the way to the southern border of the state. So that those Salt Lake County votes are overwhelmed, and you see that the majority of the voters in Salt Lake County that are in that district, they strongly disagree with and dislike Representative Stewart. But it doesn't matter because he has the votes elsewhere that he can ignore those folks and routinely does.
Okay, this is the districts and the way that they are drawn. Gerke, do you have any comment on that? We've got the other two congressional districts to talk about. Chris Stewart won there. We've got John Curtis to talk about, and then somebody new, Blake Moore. But Gerke, just yeah. on representation.
Well, and this is maybe segueing into it, but that 2nd district is a Republican-leaning seat, and while it leans Republican about the same as the 4th district does, where Ben McAdams won, the type of Republicans you have in that district are a lot more they're rural Republicans in larger part, more conservative Republicans. I mean, they come in different shades of red, I guess. And so that's a really hard race for a Democrat to punch through in. And in the 1st and the 3rd district, it's even more difficult. I mean, those seats are about, Republicans have about a 24-point advantage on average in the two seats. And so it's a real uphill battle. I would just throw in here that it looks like Biden just took a big lead, about 20,000 votes, additional lead in Nevada. And so that it looks like that one's probably done now, too. But, yeah, I mean, the 4th district is really the Democrats' best shot at taking a seat, and because the other three are just so overwhelmingly stacked against them.
I'm just going to cut you off there and say, when you say it looks like that one's done, we can't ignore that. It's an offhanded comment. But if Biden does get Nevada, that gets him to 270. Doesn't that win him the presidency?
With Arizona, but again, if Pennsylvania's in his column, it's kind of academic at this point.
Okay, got it.
With Georgia, Pennsylvania, Nevada, and leading in Arizona, where he'd finish at 306, so he can lose combinations of those and still get the presidency.
Okay,
it's important to point out, though, I think that those haven't been called yet. They're still counting ballots.
Right.
So.
Right.
By statistically, Robert is exactly right. It looks like it's going to be Biden's, unofficially, officially, those votes are still being counted. So
I'm calling it, Dan. I've called it.
the columnist calls it. Dan, is there anything to say on those other two races? I mean, we've got John Curtis returning to Washington, and then Blake Moore. He is a newbie, filling the seat that Rob Bishop is retiring from. After quite a while in Congress, right?
Yeah, 18 years. And then his predecessor, Jim Hansen, was there for 22 years. Yeah. So the folks in the 1st district, which is, northern Utah and also a big chunk of eastern Utah, they haven't seen too many new faces in Congress.
But
they've gotten used to the ones that have been there for a long, long period of time.
Sounds like we should get used to the name Blake Moore.
And Blake Moore is a newcomer. I mean, he hasn't been in politics. You know, Rob Bishop had been in politics for years. He'd been in the legislature. He'd been the state House Speaker. He was a Republican Party chairman. Everybody in the Republican Party knew Rob Bishop. And Blake Moore is just kind of this unknown in the political world. And I guess that's what voters wanted, because in the Republican primary, they had a huge array of politicians, with well-known politicians with a lot of experience. You know, we had a former state legislator and former state agriculture commissioner that was running, Kerry Gibson. And you had the mayor of Layton, Bob Stevenson. And he was the mayor of Layton and now is the Davis County commissioner. So you had all, and you had the mayor of Kaysville. You had all these well-known politicians.
Right.
And I guess voters just kind of said, well, no, we want somebody new. And so that's what they've got in Blake Moore. We don't really know a lot about his politics.
Yeah, I mean, right. Well, he won the Republican primary and now is headed to Washington. I don't know if we want to say more on that. There's other races to get to. Some obvious ones include Utah governor. The shocking results of that election are, and they're not shocking at all. The kind of, I don't know, heir apparent is going to get his seat. Lieutenant Governor Spencer Cox wins, which almost felt like a foregone conclusion, Dan.
Yeah, it did. The real race was in June with a Republican primary there, and you had strong candidates, and the top two, particularly John Huntsman, the former governor, and Spencer Cox, were front runners from the beginning, and it turned out to be pretty much between those two. And it was a very narrow race, decided narrowly. I can't remember the percentage, but it was a small gap.
Yeah.
And once he'd secured that nomination, that was pretty much it. You didn't see a lot of Spencer Cox after that, because he knew he'd had it sewn up. And the fewer appearances you make, the fewer debates you have, the fewer chances you have to screw up. And it was his to lose, and he knew that. And so he was very cautious and kind of disappeared. There were a lot of jokes about, you know, the Punxsutawney Phil and seeing his shadow. Are we going to have six more weeks of winter? But Spencer's now got to show that he's not Gary Herbert 2.0.
Well, on that front,
says,
yeah, I mean,
yeah.
Dan, I'm imagining that come January, you know, we're not going to expect, for example, a great deal of difference when it comes to the state's pandemic response. Is that safe to say? I mean, Spencer Cox was in charge of that response, correct?
Well, he really
sort of
at one point was put in the head of a task force, and you know, the state didn't explain what that was very well, and later they said, well, the task force was an advisory body; it didn't make decisions. So it all became very murky about exactly what Spencer Cox's role in the coronavirus response was. He was asked about it yesterday. They had a news conference with the governor-elect, and he was asked about COVID and what his differences will be. You know, he has not had any differences in the governor's approach to coronavirus. He has been opposed to a statewide mask mandate, as Governor Herbert has. He was asked about his positions on these things when he takes over as governor, and essentially he said he's hoping that we will have a vaccine by then, and that his main focus will be on the distribution, getting the vaccine out and making sure everybody is getting vaccinated.
We can hope. You know what? There's some interesting appointments announced by the governor-elect, among them the Tribune's former editor, Jennifer Napier Pierce, is going to be his communications director and a senior advisor. We're never going to get through this election roundup in the show. I'm sorry to listeners, but we do need to head to another break in the show. And after this break, we'll come back with more results from Tuesday night. And you're listening to Behind the Headlines here on KCPW and Utah Public Radio. Stay with us.
And again, you're listening to Behind the Headlines from KCPW Salt Lake Public Radio and the Salt Lake Tribune. Behind the Headlines is just one of our locally produced shows made to inform, engage, and entertain. Go check out our other podcasts and make a pledge at kcpw.org.
Welcome back to Behind the Headlines. I'm Roger McDonough. I'm joined by the Salt Lake Tribune's Dan Harry, Taylor Stevens, and Robert Gerke. It's our Friday morning news roundup heard on KCPW and Utah Public Radio. Weigh in on what you've been hearing by calling 801-355-8255. Again, you can tweet to us. Our handle is at KCPW. And if you missed it, earlier news columnist Robert Gerke called the presidential election for Joe Biden possibly early, but after 20,000 votes were added to Biden's tally in Nevada. We have other election results to get through, and Taylor Stevens, maybe we'll just do a quick jump into the AG's race. This was between Sean Reyes, the Attorney General of Utah, and his Democratic opponent. Predictable outcomes again. Incumbent Attorney General is winning re-election, but this race was a bit of a brawl, wasn't it, Taylor? Kind of a hard-fought race.
Yeah, this race, as you mentioned, it was pretty bruising and put Reyes on the defense a lot. His Democratic challenger, Greg Scordis, had a number of criticisms and made a number of punches throughout the race. He criticized his campaign contributions from potential investigation targets. He criticized Reyes for joining in an effort with other Republican attorneys general to dismantle the Affordable Care Act. He criticized his support for the controversial state contract with Banjo, the surveillance company that came under fire earlier this year. And so it was a hard-fought race in many ways, but not really in the ballot count. We saw that Reyes coasted to another term pretty easily. He had received, I just checked the latest results, and I think he was at about 61% of the vote overall. So nothing, no surprises
nothing
there,
unexpected.
Really.
Yeah. This is just, maybe I'll go to Gerke for a second. The AG's seat was the last statewide seat that a Democrat won in Utah. Just before we march on, Robert Gerke, your thoughts on this race and the, let's face it, expected outcome.
Yeah, I mean, I think we kind of knew this was going to be a likely Republican seat. It has been, as you mentioned, for 20 plus years, since Jan Graham held it. It also, I think, speaks to, if I could kind of piggyback on what Dan was saying about the governor's race, in the age of COVID, it just disrupted the electoral process that we had, and it made it really hard for challengers to get out and maybe outwork their opponent. It came down a lot more to who has more money and who's the incumbent. And I think we saw that it was just really hard for challengers to run against an entrenched, well-funded opponent with COVID hanging over him.
Okay.
Sean Reyes tweeted just now that it looks he's questioning the validity of the election now, the presidential election. He says that the courts may have to decide this, coming out strong for President Trump right out of the gate, as he has for the last 4 years.
Does he have any, that's an interesting tweet to, we'll have to dig into that at some point, but for now I want to keep going through this racism. We don't have very much time left in the show, and so legislative races to get through. Again, in the supermajority state, there's not a lot of narrative there, but the Democrats did make some gains in the state legislature, and Dan Harry a dent in the supermajority, though a supermajority it remains. Some seats flipped, though, for the Democratic Party.
Right now, it looks like they are going to pick up three seats. The Democrats will pick up three seats in the House.
Okay. And Robert, go ahead, Dan. Yeah, sorry.
And it does not look like anything will change in the Senate.
Okay. News columnist Robert Gerke, you predicted some flips for Democrats at the legislature. What sorcery did you use to tell the future? Why did you think this might happen?
I can peer into the future. That's how I know Biden wins the presidency. There are some districts that are close every time, and a big Democratic turnout is going to probably make those seats closer. I would kind of caveat this. It does look like three will flip at least. As we mentioned, there are still tens of thousands, scores of thousands of ballots to count in Salt Lake County, and that's where all of these pickups would come. So, you know, we still need to watch this. There's a lot more votes to be counted, and things could still change. Okay. But, yeah, I would note, though, that this tees up the going into redistricting. You know, it's likely that Republicans are probably going to do their best to, you know, draw these districts to disadvantage these newly elected representatives. But let's not rain on the parade. They can enjoy it for now.
Okay.
Can I just say quickly, too, and I know you're running out of time, but, you know, while some of these were swing districts, I happen to live in one of them, Jim Dunnigan's district, and I don't know exactly how many years he's been there, but Jim Dunnigan's been there a long time. So even though on paper it may look like the district is becoming more of a swing district, It is quite surprising to see a long-time incumbent like that is right now appears on his way out. And the same thing with Eric Hutchings from Kearns. I mean, he has been in the legislature as a Republican for many, many years, and now it looks like that he's getting tossed out by the Democratic challenger as well.
I want to just here. Let's do this quickly. Seven constitutional amendments were on the ballot. All of them passed. Maybe we can just very quickly talk about a couple of them. One of them was particularly contentious, having to do with education funding, though it was part of a legislative deal. That passed. They all passed. One that that makes our preferred way for managing wildlife is now hunting and sort of enshrines hunting in the Constitution. And then there was a measure banning language having to do with slavery as a form of punishment. That language will be stripped out of the Utah Constitution. But there was sort of a sizable number of Utah voters who thought that the slavery language should stay a part of our state constitution. Is that right? I don't know who can talk about that.
I think it was, 20% or something like that?
And I guess we don't know why they felt that way. The numbers don't tell us that. But it's what's the word? Interesting. Gerke, just on the constitutional. Well, you know what? We got to save it. We got to turn now to our final segment, the underplayed stories of the week. And so we will leave a bunch of local elections to the side, county races, for example, and instead say check it all out and get all of your results over at sltrib.com. And for now, we will turn to our final segment, the underplayed stories of the week. Dan Harry, why don't you kick things off for us if you're ready?
Okay, I'm going to pick a non-political story because we've been talking about elections.
Have we?
And that's that the landfill up on Promontory Point, real close to the Great Salt Lake, is once again renewing its effort to bring in a out-of-state waste. They're trying to get a permit that would allow them to bring in waste from other states. And that would include coal ash, which had been a central part of their original plan. And environmentalists and advocates for the lake are very concerned about this because they fear that it could lead down the road to some contamination of the lake, and which actually has a pretty fragile environment right now and is a migration place for tens of millions of birds.
Hmm. This is a story by Leah Larson at the Tribune talking about that that application for a Class V permit, or maybe it's Class 5, I don't know. Check that out at sltrib.com. Thank you, Dan, for that pick. It was actually mine as well.
Sorry, Roger.
No, you're fine. We'll turn to Robert Gerke. What have you got for an underplayed story of the week?
Well, I'm going back to elections. Courtney Tanner featured the state school board races, and these are important offices that people don't pay much attention to. This was the first year we had partisan school board races. And eight of the nine school board seats were run by Republicans in this first time around. And so that may represent a shift in the way that the state school board operates and the way our children are educated.
Okay. Really interesting pick from Robert Gerke, Courtney Tanner's reporting. Again, you can find that as well at sltrib.com. And Taylor Stevens, your underplayed story pick.
Yeah, I'll go back to elections as well, since we didn't have time to cover everything. But we saw last night Riverton Mayor Trent Staggs conceded in his race against Jenny Wilson. This is her first term elected as Salt Lake County Mayor. Interesting race because she didn't really campaign that much and focused a lot on COVID and dealing with the ongoing situation with the coronavirus. So I was not sure how that strategy was going to work for her, but she did end up winning. And as I said, we'll have her first full term in office now.
Okay. Interesting pick from Taylor as well. Check that out at sltrib.com. I'm going to do a little bit of an audible and just a story that was recently published at sltrib.com is by Eric Walden, and it's a album of the month club, which aims to help local musicians hurt by the pandemic. You can find that at the Tribune's homepage right now, sltrib.com, as well as everything else we've been talking about on the show. And again, you've been listening to Behind the Headlines here on KCPW and Utah Public Radio. And I've been joined by Dan Harry, Robert Gerke, and Taylor Stevens, all with that newspaper. Thanks very much for joining me on the show today.
Thanks, Roger. Have a good weekend.
You too. Have a great weekend. And that does it for Behind the Headlines, a co-production of KCPW and the Salt Lake Tribune. You can find podcasts of the show at kcpw.org. And also, of course, as always, in your podcast app. I'm Roger McDonough. Thanks very much for listening. And yeah, have a great weekend.